Keshav, do you know Mark Zuckerberg has been talking about Metaverse these days?
Yes, I read this recently. In fact, it caught me by surprise, as I had read about this in Snowcrash the first time. And now it's very close to becoming a reality.
For all the listeners, Metaverse is a term that refers to a universe of virtual worlds, including the internet.
And Nvidia too has been investing a lot in this, inviting Blender users to build 3D softwares and opening its gates to engineers.
Yes, it's a very exciting time ahead for the future of design and technology. And as we progress, the role of UX starts to increase.
For sure. Since their inception, computers have been viewed as physically distinct objects, separated from our everyday world. The next step was designing interfaces. UX came much later, at the onset of the digital age, and the focus has now been shifted to designing for every possible experience and user.
True. According to venture capitalist Matthew Ball, the metaverse has become the newest macro goal for many of the world's tech giants. It is the express goal of Epic Games, maker of the Unreal Engine and Fortnite. It is also the driver behind Facebook's purchase of Oculus VR and its newly announced Horizon Virtual World Meeting Space, among many, many other projects, such as AR glasses and brain-to-machine communications.
Yes, for sure. The metaverse can be viewed as a next stage in human-computer interaction, in which computers can be viewed as portals to new worlds entirely.
These days, good design refers to something which is aesthetically pleasing, right? Something which is easy to use and solves our problems. But in a metaverse, immersion will be one of the key indicators of good design.
Exactly. In a metaverse, design will not be concerned with how quickly someone can accomplish their goal. It would be more focused on whether a person can pursue the goal in the first place.
Even thinking about it seems so cool to me. Imagine traveling to meet friends rather than meeting them on a Google Meet, or shopping in a virtual market rather than on websites or apps.
That would be so cool. There are a lot of unopened doors as we move ahead. But for this, designers would need to expand their skills, as they would now be studying subjects like economics, urban planning, psychology, and much more.
They would need to start viewing metaverse as a human society first and not as a product or service. A metaverse presents design from a new angle, kind of like adding a human lens to it. It's much more proximate to our own reality, using space, time, and reality in a way that has never been done before.
Yes, for sure. This is a challenge they'll have to overcome to design immersive experiences.
There are exciting times ahead for UX, and today we have on board with us Abhas Sinha, a UX designer working with Microsoft, to give us insights into UX and his journey into the same. From working with Vodafone to an analyst in EY, one of the largest firms in the world, it's a pleasure to have him on board. Having interned with Zomato in a UI UX role and with Adobe in a design role, if I had to describe him in one line, he's a jack of all trades and master of some. We are very excited to welcome our first guest, Abhas Sinha, currently working with Microsoft. I'm sure this is going to be an episode where you'll all have something to take away. Welcome to 9 Degrees, exploring new angles.
Hey Abhas, welcome to 9 Degrees. How have you been these days?
I've been great, Keshav. Thank you for having me here. And I hope COVID and the lockdown were all easy on you. And I hope even for the listeners, they're all doing great.
By the way, let me call out that the views that I'm going to express will be my own and will not be reflective of my employer in any possible way. So yeah, my views, and here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. So having looked at your experiences, you have done so many diverse things. What's been this journey like for you, and what attracted you to UX in the first place?
Interesting question. So I think I've always been interested in design in some way or form, and it, not just design, more like design and some aspect of tech, which is kind of like the intersection that is called UX these days. So back when I was in school, I would be doing all the design work. I became this go-to kid for making posters, logos, or covers for the school magazine, stuff like that. And I think back then it was more like if you knew how to work well with Photoshop, that is what a designer was back then. Now it's way more. But I was that kid, and from school and college, I think I've always been into some aspect of tech and design. That's where the intersection happened, like digital design. And that's where UX came from. I think I realized that UX as a field exists. And yeah, I made the jump and it just made sense. I was doing it anyways, so now I'm doing it for a company. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So you worked on Microsoft Surface Duo. So what was that experience like for you, designing for dual screen devices, which what I'll call a breakthrough in technology? What challenges did you face?
So yeah, it's a super interesting project for me, very close to my heart. To me, it was super interesting because it was the first time, as designers and even as users, we're used to these single screen devices, whether it's a phone or a tablet or like an iPad or something.
Yes, yes.
They're all single screen, whether if it's a big screen or a small screen, they're all single screen. So with the Duo, what was super interesting was, even though there are two separate screens and they kind of behave like they're one virtual screen inside of it, there is a seam in the center that gives you the sense of, hey, you have two separate workspaces to work with. So yeah. I think that was the most interesting aspect of it. I specifically worked only on the Office app, designing the Office app for Duo. That was my contribution, I guess. And yeah, it was a very interesting challenge to help optimize Office for
Duo. It was kind of like discovering a new room, which it was presently not there, and now it's there.
Yeah, in a way you could say that, because essentially, when you have a single screen, you can only put so much information. When you have two, a lot of possibilities start opening up.
Yeah.
Things that you couldn't do with one screen, now you can with two screens. So that was probably the most interesting aspect of it.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So recently, Microsoft introduced its new collection of emojis, Fluent Emojis, which has added another dimension to our cute little characters. So what are your thoughts on the same? I mean, they look really great, no doubt on that. But do you think that people will be able to notice that difference in their daily lives, referring to the fact that emojis are generally really small?
Okay, for a general statement, I think emojis might be small, but the impact is huge. We all know how when iPhone came out, with the iPhone came out like a bunch of different emojis. They're so well received. It doesn't matter what their size was. I think it just opened up a whole new way to communicate with people. People had all this new way to express their emotions, not using any words or language barriers, or just even provide emotion to a sentence that they have written. So a joke seems more like a joke if you put a laughing emoji on it. Speaking specifically of the new Microsoft ones, I think they look super cool. I didn't personally work on them, so I'll refrain from specifically doing a deep dive there. But I think they look super cool. They look super cute. It's a very interesting three-dimensional day. I think there's no doubt that they look really awesome. But I mean, if you're saying something like, will people notice any difference? I think they will. It's all about the details. And this is a very kind of cool way, I guess, to reach out to people rather than saying, use a very specific app. I think this kind of will reach more people. That's how I view it.
Yeah, I think that could happen. So yeah, even I use emojis in almost every text that I send. So
it's kind of the same. It's like
adding that extra layer on top of words, and it gives a sense of familiarity to me for sure. So what are your thoughts on the future of emojis from a UX perspective?
Right. I mean, so first of all, I'm also guilty of the same. I use so many emojis. One of my friends actually challenged me to not use any emojis for one single day.
Oh, that would have
and been see how that goes. It was a very difficult day. but yeah, I think the future of emojis, that's also super interesting, because like I said, emojis are breaking that language barrier. People don't need words anymore. They can use that expression, express their emotion. and add an extra layer of emotion to words that they've already said. So I think with something like right now, you're able to hear my voice, you're able to see how I sound, not sounding angry. But with text, it's not that clear. So emojis do bring that extra dimension. What is the future? I think, so Clubhouse, right, is this audio only app these days. And I think even Facebook was working on something with...
Spotify is working on Green Room. They have launched it recently.
Okay. Yeah, that's all. Like, the point is, I think the future is super bright because the end objective is to communicate that extra layer of expression and emotion. And when you kind of cross this barrier of language, I think you end up communicating to more people. I think there could be nothing better than that. There is no other way to put it. It's super bright. And not just that, I think emojis are present these days, even on apps. Like, if you were to read basic text, you see emojis. There are articles that use emojis, probably. So I think they're super cool. And not just cool, I think the future is pretty bright. I think they're not going anywhere. The sky is pretty much the limit. And yeah, probably not even the sky. It's just going to go. There's a lot of room there.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree with you. So for all the listeners out there, dark patterns are kind of like those UI UX interactions which are designed to trick users and make them do something they don't want to do. So what are your thoughts on light and dark UX?
Interesting. Dark patterns, I think they're just... Okay, so what is the worst thing when you use like a dark pattern is... Okay, so the user wants to do something, they know they want to do it. App companies just make it harder to do it. For example, it's harder to disable your Facebook account than it is to
create a new one. Subscription.
Yeah, things like that. So the point is, or I think one more dark pattern could be, you know, slyly just when you're signing up for a new account on some platforms, they'll also register you for their newsletter very quietly, very subtly. So the user has no intent of signing up the newsletter. They see a check mark, they think that it's all right. So what happens is people lose their sense of trust with the brand. I think that's the biggest price to pay when brands use dark patterns. I think in the longer term, it's just going to erode trust. So that's my take on it. I think if brands continue using dark patterns, getting what they want out of the user, I mean, maybe in the short term, it'll work out, but the word and sentiment is going to travel. It's not a must. It's just not a good thing to do, I guess.
Yes, that's right. So, yeah, what made you change your mind to pursue design after exploring a lot of stuff?
Interesting. So, yeah, I you could look at my resume and say that I've gone through a lot of stuff.
Yeah, engineering, then consultancy, then finally design.
Yeah. So I think, like I said earlier, I was always doing design from school. I was into it. And I think the genesis of that also is I used to watch a lot of cartoons when I was growing up. So I wanted to draw and paint and stuff like that. So that's where the initial spark of creativity came from. And then I had access to my laptop and Photoshop was there. So that's what kind of made me connect the two dots. I wanted to take my artsy interests and take it to my laptop because I didn't want to keep buying art supplies. Things. So because I was always doing design, you could say in a way that I was always in design. I was just doing other random stuff alongside. Like even when I was doing my BTech, I think I was having a lot of fun making posters for events. Our BTech campus had a sister campus that had an MBA college, and even they would come out and say, I'm asking you to design a poster. So it was a lot of fun to me. That's all I could say. And even when I was in consulting, I remember I used to work with their CSR division sometimes when I think like it was extracurricular during my job then. So I would happily design posters for them as well. So I think that's where it came from. And when I did kind of get a bit of work experience, when I did get done with my engineering, I wanted to pursue something more core to my aspirations, more centered to creativity, like I've kind of wanted. So yeah, that's where I got the opportunity. I learned about IIT offering this design course. And then yeah, I went for it, worked out, and boom, here we are.
Yeah, that's pretty great. So what's the best part and worst part about working as a UX designer, according to you?
Well, it's a lot of fun. I think there are more pros than there are cons. Definitely a lot of fun, especially for people who are actually interested in it. I would urge people, first of all, to kind of look into their interests and not just pursue something because
it looks cool.
Yeah, because it looks cool or someone said it's fun. I mean, probably someone thinks a different activity is fun. Like, for example, to me, sports are okay. They're not like a lot of fun to me. So somebody could say sports are fun, and then if I were to try it, I'd be like, it's just okay. But so I think that subjectivity comes there at that point. But to me, it's a lot of fun. I was doing design during my general daytime anyways. I'm just doing it now with a more specific purpose and intent. So that's a really fun thing. I love my tool set. I love working with different kind of graphic applications and vector applications, UI design applications and prototyping tools. And it's just so much fun to me, like exploring all of these tools, making something new. The worst part, I don't know what could be the worst part. I think there is no specific standout worst part in my eyes. I would say, as any traditional job would go, no matter what job you have, I guess.
Far better than that.
I'm not saying, yeah, I mean, definitely to me it is. But what I'm trying to say is, like any traditional job also has its pros and cons. Like, probably, even if design could be a lot of fun, that doesn't mean that there aren't days where I'm up at night working on designs, trying to close on things. So work does happen, and I think it's a part and parcel of every job. So to me, even that is not the worst part. I just treat it as, no matter what job I would be doing, there would be moments where there are a lot of meetings, there's a lot of extra work required. But to me, that's not a standout worst part of it. And yeah, when you're doing something you're enjoying, you're just having fun, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So with people entering into this emerging field of UX design, so they have a lot of doubts. So I would like to highlight one of them. Do UX designers need to know how to code, or are they better off focusing only on their design skills?
Okay. So this question has been asked a bunch of times as well. So I'll repeat the answer that I've replied to individuals. The short answer is no, you don't need to know how to code. More and more companies are now realizing, even startups at this point, know the value of a designer and the value of design. So it's better, I would say, that designers hone their design skills, and it's better for engineers to hone their engineering skills. However, having said that, it's still okay. Like, if you want, as a designer, to learn how to code, more power to you. Like, please go ahead and do that. There's no discouragement there. And if you're an engineer and if you want to like inculcate a stronger sense of design, again, more power to you. That would be the ideal scenario, I would say, when both people are on the same page and they could have their own really strong skill sets. Like, a designer could have their own very strong design skill set. But even then, they kind of understand and speak the language of probably something like an engineer. So they don't need to know how to code. It is good to know what the logic is when you're working on something like digital products, which is what I'm doing, right? Like, I'm working on web and mobile apps in that web and mobile app space. So it is good for me to know that logic. If I don't know my platform, if I don't know what I'm actually building for, then that just makes me super oblivious. It just makes me say something like, or it might just make me say something like, hey, I've made this very crazy artwork and the animation should be like this, and this should happen and that should happen. And engineering is just, I mean, it's not like anything is impossible, but it's just not worth it. Like, if I come up and say something very, I think just something that doesn't work naturally or that platform doesn't support, I think it's just extra headache. So it's good to understand the logic part.
So it's like an added advantage.
Yeah, it is an advantage. So, but if you're looking for a design job, they're not going to ask you how to code. I don't think that's going to happen. I think very early on, probably many years ago, very small companies would say, we want a designer and we also want them to code. So I think that part is kind of on its way out, or if it's not out, I'm
thinking. Yeah, got it. So I read a quote somewhere, perfection is a direction and you need to stop at the right point or it can kill you. And this happens with designers quite frequently. Even with me when illustrating, it's like always this feeling of adding something more to an artwork. So what are your thoughts on this? And have you been stuck in a loop of iterations while designing? And how did you come out of it eventually?
Interesting. So yes, I think the aspect about, you know, perfection.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a bunch of different learnings I have here. I think, first of all, doing something is better than waiting on it to be perfect. So it's more important to get stuff done, but then that doesn't mean you completely sacrifice all quality. As for something like, you gave me an example, when you're illustrating, you want to add more and more stuff. So I think there is this famous quote about art that says, a work of art is never finished, it's left abandoned. So at one point of time, you have to stop with art, I think. For design, I think it's more like, yes, there are a bunch of iterations, but you're eventually trying to solve a problem. And you need to understand who you're designing for, what you're designing for, what scenarios that person going to be, what if you're making a product, who and when are they going to be using it. There's going to be iterations. When you're stuck in a loop of iterations, let's say very closely matching iterations, the good thing is working in a team. So you get a lot of feedback, you get a lot of extra thoughts that you would not have on your own. You might just get stuck. You might have a very biased viewpoint towards one set of iterations, I guess. And that's where you go out, you seek, you talk to people, you talk to users, you talk to your team, and that can help you break that loop, I guess.
For sure. Yeah. So currently, NFTs are on the rise. It's like kind of a gold mine for designers. So what's your take on this?
So
do you think NFTs, that it's like the initial days of Bitcoin?
In some ways, yes. People are rushing into it. And especially people who realize that, oh my God, I should have spent some more money on Bitcoin back in the day. So that's what they're trying to do, I guess. But NFTs specifically, I would say, are facing the same situation as any artist would, and any person who wants to sell art would. So it is like, if I want to make art, if I'm sitting at home and if I make a really beautiful looking painting, in itself, fine, it's a good looking painting, but why would anyone want to buy it? I don't think people want to buy stuff just because it looks good with art. Because I would say that although it's a very hard skill to perfect and it's very difficult to make very beautiful looking paintings, there are two aspects to it. Like, I think, first of all, beauty is kind of in the hands of the beholder. So what you think is beautiful might not be beautiful.
It's very subjective.
Yeah, and the second part of it is, I think it's more like a network kind of thing, where, like I said, if I were to make a piece of art, sure, maybe my parents will like it, maybe my friends will like it, maybe one of them will want to buy it, but then that's it, I guess. If a famous artist or somebody who's in the know, who has a network of people following their art, if they want to sell something, they have a higher chance of getting their artwork sold. So with NFTs, it's not, I guess you're not talking to me about just making the art. You're asking me about selling that part, right? So
yeah,
I've seen a bunch of Instagram artists, but they had that following. They've been working really hard on their art, and they've amassed a huge following on Instagram. They've gone into these specific niches of what they want to, what is the kind of content they want to make, and then when they moved on to the NFT platforms, they have that ready network that is kind of, you know, already ready to buy their stuff.
So they have an edge over others.
Yeah. So, I mean, making art is one aspect of it. And then if you want to sell it, I think it's the same problem as any artist kind of faces when they want to sell art. I think it's not just that it looks good, that's going to be enough. It's about probably the network. It's about the cultural aspect of it. Like, I think that's a very important part of any art. It doesn't just need to look good. I mean, I've seen art that you can probably say is not that great. I mean, what's so great about it? But what is a cultural objective of it? What cultural piece is it reflective of, I guess? I think that's a very important aspect of it. So, I think it's the same problem there.
Yeah, sure. So, young designers often experience this something called as imposter syndrome. So, how do you think one can overcome this?
So I myself have been guilty of it for the longest period of time. I'm not sure if guilty is the right word. Is the right word victim? I don't know. I've experienced the symptoms, I would say. So the idea is, yes, it happens. It happens to all of us. And it's very natural. I mean, in some ways, it's very humbling, right? Like you don't think of yourself as, hey, I'm the greatest person on earth. I think everyone
exactly opposite
deserves it, yeah. Yeah, so you start feeling like, oh my God, have they not seen how bad I am? Or have they not seen the mistakes that I make? Or did I just come here by accident? Like, maybe they didn't know what they've chosen or something.
Yeah.
So those are all very natural thought processes. I think the good takeaway there is keep the humility. Don't be arrogant about it. So that's one good takeaway. But the way to overcome it is just ask yourself, are you doing the best that you can in that particular given situation?
Yes.
And that's it, I guess. I mean, if your answer is, I'm doing the most I can and I'm doing the best that I can, then it's okay. Trust the other person's judgment. They've invested in you and that doesn't really make you... Yeah, you're an error on their part, so...
Yeah, that was a great explanation. So what do you think one can expect after he enters UX?
Okay. I mean, if you're entering a job, I'm guessing you're already kind of acquainted with what the scenario is like. You kind of have done your homework in terms of, hey, this is what UX entails. These are the kind of products that digital designers make. Things like, I mean, I'm guessing any designer would be acquainted that, they will be making websites or ads or something like that. Or even like interaction or interactive exhibits or something. So the idea is, I think they've done their initial homework. It's not going to come as a huge surprise.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when they enter a job what to expect. I don't know, have a lot of fun, I guess. That's all I can think of.
That's the best answer one can give.
Yeah, I think it'll be very exciting no matter what product you're working on. I think it's the day and age of mobile apps and web apps. So for sure, whatever you're going to be working on is going to be used by at least a few people. And if not a lot, a few people. And even if it's one person, you're making that change. So a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, sure. So sometimes, after designing for a long period of time, people often hit a dead end and they start facing what we can call creativity block. Because as we know, when there are no rules, there is a lot of uncertainty involved. So have you faced this in your career? And if yes, how did you overcome this?
So first of all, I think it would be wrong to say there are no rules. There are certain principles when you're designing, right? You want to help solve a problem. You know how there are strategies to help solve a problem, how strategies to help like come up with a solution. There are ways around it, I would say. But even then, it's not a lie that creativity blocks are a truth. They do happen. They happen to all of us. They have happened to me. And then again, this is where working in a very collaborative space is very helpful when you're working with your team. You get the opportunity to collectively share and generate ideas, brainstorm, be stupid about it, it's completely fine. So those are things that can help shake off the block. working with people, I think, is the number one way to do that. And I think if all else fails, take a break. It's very important. Please take care of your mental health, of your physical health.
Yeah.
It's very easy to get lost in the cycle of day job and whatever, you know, kind of progressing, wanting something more. I think, yeah, take a break and read a book. I think one super important way to do that is, by the way, just take a walk. Honestly, just it is such a good way to think of new ideas and just kind of breathe for a second. And then don't beat yourself up for something like, hey, I'm watching a movie and I'm watching it so that I can generate ideas now. Just watch a movie, enjoy it. It's okay, take a break. So it's very important.
What I do is generally I start reading fiction. It's one of the best.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Get those creative sparks.
Yep.
Yeah, so with social media, right, designers often resort to sites like Pinterest, Behance to get inspired. And how big a role do you think these sites play? And don't you think that if someone does this too often, he may lose his originality?
Okay. So I think it's actually pretty good to look at sites like Pinterest and Behance or even Dribbble and get inspired. I mean, I think in an answer to the previous question as well, this is one more way to kind of get the gears going.
Yeah.
And this is also one more good way to kind of understand what is currently trending. You know, when you're working, especially in big organizations, it's very easy to lose sight of what is out there because you're so invested in your product. So I think this is a very good window into, hey, what's actually out there? What are people working on these days? What is the new trend? You know, things like gradients have gone and then come back into trend. Shadows have gone and come back into trend.
Yeah, currently neomorphism is going on at the
moment. Yeah, right. And then big type, all those things. So it's I think it's a very helpful window into understanding, you know, what time we're living in. But if you're worried about losing originality, so I think it's a very interesting thing. I don't know. Some people say good artists copy, good artists steal, you know, that quote.
Steal like an artist from Austin Kleon. Yeah, that's a great book.
So that's a great book, by the way. Yes. So I wouldn't say go out and steal stuff. I'm sure you can. But I think originality is in trying to solve a problem, not in implementing the solution, I guess. What are you trying to do? That's where the originality really comes. Because there's going to be certain things a certain app or a website does and might not fit the use case for what you're designing for. So there's always going to be scope for that originality. And I think a good designer doesn't have their own style. That's a more artist thing to do. A good designer should be able to, I think, go in and out of styles at the drop of a hat, for the lack of a better phrase. But yeah, they should be able to kind of put themselves into specific shoes or put different hats on, think different in different ways. So I think that's the superpower that a designer should have.
Yeah, got it. So I was also watching Chetan Bhagat's video recently. He stated that an author should not be known only for one of his books. So that's exactly what we can...
Probably, That's exactly... I mean, yeah, think of Daniel Radcliffe being known for only Harry Potter. So it's a difficult shell to break for... for some such a prominent role, right? It's tough for anyone to see. I mean, I still see Pierce Brosnan as James Bond, no matter what movie he shows up in.
So
I think the designer superpower here is to be able to go into the user's shoes, put on those different hats. Originality is in solving the solution. That's where I would say it is.
Yeah. So that was a really good explanation. So it's time for rapid fire. So there'll be 9 questions,
awesome.
And you have to answer each question in 10 seconds.
Okay.
Ready?
Let's do this. All right, let's do this.
What's your favorite emoji?
I think I like the poop emoji and I like the monkey emoji and I think the peach emoji and the fire emoji. Those would be my top favorites.
Nice. So if a book was written on your life, what would its title be?
Oh my god. I think the title would be borderline, or more like living on the edge, because it's almost like I take one decision and suddenly everything changes. I go from management consultant to design. And you know, the first time I filled my design exam form, I was like 6 hours late. So again, I'm on that borderline always of things. So yeah, living on the edge, I think.
That's a very good
I might not be, but yeah.
So jack of all trades or master of one?
I would say jack of all trades and master of some. That is my personal way of thinking.
I like this answer very much because that's my Instagram bio.
Oh, nice.
So yeah. Dark mode or light mode?
Ooh. Okay, short answer is contextual. I prefer light mode during the day, dark mode during the night. But then again, dark mode, I agree, is more aesthetically pleasing. And I do prefer that for certain apps and interfaces. So it's such a contextual answer.
So any advice for young designers in one line?
I might say two sentences, so forgive me for that.
Sure.
But keep observing more, and so observe more, and don't be afraid of sharing your thoughts. That's the strongest answer. Great. I think.
Favorite book?
Ooh, that's like asking me my favorite color. That's you can't ask a favorite book. I think one great design book is this book called User Experience. It's called. And then one book I'm reading right now. Sorry, no, it's called User Friendly. How the hidden rules of design are changing the way we live.
The one with the white cover.
Yeah. Design books are usually white covers. And then I'm reading this book called The Rosie Project these days. Very, very fun. Yeah, very fun book. And then again, if you want one more recommendation. Oh yeah, Bill Gates also recommended it. Actually, for me, my friend recommended it to me, and that's why I picked it up. So that's the answer there. One more interesting book, just like it's a staple, and I think everyone should read it. It's that Don Norman book, Design of Everyday Things.
The one who started UX. Yeah. So favorite app only because of its UI.
Oh my God. I think I don't have a favorite app because of its UI, but I do have a bunch of different favorite UI patterns in a bunch of different apps. So I like how Instagram has kind of popularized the double tap to like paradigm. Headspace is an interesting app, has a very illustrative look to it. I think Uber has done some interesting stuff with cards in the past. Yeah. And I don't know if this is going to be like an oddball answer, but I also like the Shortcuts app that Apple has. I like the big square boxes.
It is complicated though.
Yeah, it is complicated. It definitely. It has its own problems, but it's an interesting app.
So what type of music are you into?
Ooh, a lot of hip hop. I listen to a lot of Logic, Eminem, Kendrick, and just any kind of hip hop is very interesting to me, J. Cole. But then I also listen to a lot of alternative and indie stuff, like The Neighborhood, Tame Impala, Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, nice.
These are somewhat more popular. Even Billie Eilish, oh my God. Yeah. These days I've been listening to Billie Eilish. Lots of cool stuff. I specifically don't want to follow one thing. I like to keep it diverse.
Got it. So Figma or Adobe XD?
Figma. That's it. I think that's the shortest answer I've given you so far.
So that was pretty great. So there were two questions which my friend wanted to ask Mudit Tripathi. So first one, how do you click pictures on Instagram?
So I use my phone. I tried to use my DSLR back in the day. I think it was too much hassle. I think DSLRs need an app inside of them that lets them publish directly to Instagram. But the hassle is basically...
He was particularly fascinated by the perspectives you have shown on your handle.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure which specific photos he's talking about, but yeah, it's just all phone stuff, like mostly just an iPhone. That's
great,
it.
Great. How are your 2 years at IT Delhi?
Oh, a lot of fun. I think anything to do with design for me is a lot of fun. So even IIT Delhi was a lot of fun. And IIT Delhi, I think, is everything that it has been made out to be is definitely a good aspiration to have in any medium form. What a great place. You have so much freedom to explore and make your dreams come true. As cliche as that might sound, it's true. It's a very nice place.
Great. So last question, but not the least. If you had one chance to leave your current job at Microsoft and join 9 Degrees, Will you take it?
Yeah. Well, you have to make me an offer I can't refuse, so I'll think about it, I guess.
Sure, I'll think of the offer. So it was really great talking to you. Cheers.
Likewise, Kishore. All right, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks a lot for listening. Hope you all had a great time. 9 Degrees exploring new angles. Also, we love to hear from you. Do drop us a review and follow us on Instagram @9degreesofficial. And yeah, do subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. Till then, stay tuned. Cheers!